So now we're going to get into step three. We've kind of rolled off of step one and step two. And the cool thing that we need to remember is that we're trying to get sober for good and all. We're not trying to get sober for a minute. And so I had an experience recently where, and you guys can't be afraid to say, you know what, I'm not sure you're really getting this. Why don't you go home and think about it before we get on with that third step. I worked with a girl recently and you know, she got that physical piece. She understood that every time she drank, she got drunk, and she so got down with that. But when I started talking about the mental piece, she was like, no, I think I can control it. And that's what she said. I think I can control it. And so there was no point in moving on with the rest of the steps. Because if I move on with the rest of the steps, then I'm denying her the chance of her finding her own truth. She's got to see her own truth. I can't make her see her own truth. Does that make sense? Because it's kind of like, if I don't see my own truth, I'm going to look at the rest of the steps and I'm going to go, oh my gosh, that's good for her or him. They need that. I don't have to do that. Or that's where we start really balking and balking and balking later on. And we relapse, and we wonder why we fell. So I told her to leave and go try that controlled drinking, or go try to control it on your own, or just don't do it. It's clearly a problem. Just go home and don't do it. 2 weeks later, I get a phone call. Get a phone call 2 weeks later. I can't do this on my own. She's sober today. Yeah, I mean, that's the coolest thing. She had never been introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, ever. This is her first time in AA. How cool is that? That she gets a true experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm digging it. I'm digging it. All right. So I got to this little wind up joint in Dallas, and we call them wind up joints because that's where you wind up. But I used to go there every Wednesday night and every Wednesday morning. We would do the IOP Wednesday morning, and we would do the inpatient on Wednesday night for the women. And the IOP was a mixed group, and I have to tell you, the coolest thing looking out in this room is how many women are in this room. I can't tell you. It makes me cry. Because it's not the norm. It's just not. And I'm not saying it's not hard for men to get sober. And bless you men that are here. I love you guys. But what we find a lot of times is that the woman gets home and they need to what? Get take care of the kid, take care of the husband, take care of this, take care of that. We're the caretakers. That's just who we are. And all of a sudden, the big book, the book, the program, the what we've been taught is pushed aside, and we start thinking we need to what? Do dot, dot, dot. And then we find we relapse. And so what I would see is I would see these 25 women inpatient, and when I would do outpatient, I would see one, two women. And so I'm like, where are you guys? Where are you guys? So thank you for being here, besides the fact that all of y'all are so freaking beautiful.
It's California.
California! Looking good. I love the California time, too. I like to roll into that. All right, on page 60, let's get into this. On page 60, it says, being convinced we're at step three. All right, so what are we convinced of? If you go right back up, it says A, that we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives. B, that no human power can relieve our alcoholism, and that God could and would if he were sought. Here's the deal. Are you screwed? And do you have a little hope? I mean, that's the question. Are you convinced of step one, and do you believe that this might work for you? Being convinced of that. But you have to be convinced before I'm going to move on. See, here's my question to you, if I'm working with you. Are you done? Yeah. Are you done? Are you done for good? Because if you're not, I'm not wasting my time, and I'm not wasting your time. See, if you have a better plan and if you're convinced that you can do this another way, adios, there's the door. See ya. I don't mind saying it. Because I want you sober and I want you on the firing line with me. Because I want more women out here doing this. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So here's the deal. Everybody's like gets on step three and they're like, I'm on step three. I'm figuring God out. Didn't say figure God out. That's not what it says. Here's your requirements. Are you convinced that your life run on your own self-will is not successful? Yes? All right, there you go. Be convinced of that, right? So we have a few little requirements here. And then it's going to lay out a perfect example of what that looks like, right? Like everybody wants to be the actor, the director, the setting up this, setting up that. Hey, listen, that's everybody in this world, not just you. You don't get that character. See, my husband is great. I love my husband to death. Y'all know how much I love him. But when it comes to him driving, I look out the window and say, today, I look out the window most of the time. Let's get honest. Sometimes I'd tell him how to drive. But I'd look out the window and say, thy will not mine be done. Because what he does is he sits there and he's like, oh, that person cut me off. And oh, right. He's like trying to tell everybody else how they should be driving while he's doing the same thing. Right? He can do that. See, everybody in this world lives by self-propulsion. Everybody wants their way to some extent and thinks that they have a good idea of what it should look like. Everybody wants to manage and control things, right? And so you get to the next page. There we're going to start talking about the alcoholic, all right? He says selfish self-centeredness, I love that exclamation point, that we think is the root of our troubles, meaning the alcoholic. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Or, in my case, they go away. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we find that at some time in our past, we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Now, the first time I read that, I thought, you can take that page out. Just mark it out, because that's not me. I'm a giver. I give, give, give. I'm so sweet and kind, right? So delusional. But let's look at this, because it's as simple as this. And I love when I go to the treatment centers, I love to give this example. Let's say I'm sitting in a meeting, right? I'm sitting in a meeting, and let's say Audrey looks at me, and I don't like the way she looks at me. Like, she just, So now my mind is starting to turn. And then I start replaying every conversation that we've had in the past 3 months. I can't come up with anything that I've done because it's always, I'm going to do something. And so what do I think? That bitch. That's really what I think. That is what I think. So what am I going to do? I'm going to leave there and I'm going to call Kimberly. I'm going to call my friend Kimberly. Oh my God, Kimberly, you won't believe what Audrey did. And Kimberly is so sweet, and she loves us, and she wants us to be good, and she's the fixer of the group. So she's going to call Audrey, and she's going to say, Audrey, why are you mad at Julie? Because Julie's awesome. Thank you. And Audrey's going to say, what? Now, driven by, when I'm sitting in that meeting, what was I driven by? Fear. Fear she doesn't like me? Self-seeking. I need her to like me to be okay? Right? Self-delusion. She's not thinking about me. The world does not revolve around me, although I think it does.
Probably weren't even looking at you.
Probably weren't. So, I stepped on her toes. What do they do in my life? They quit calling. They don't retaliate. They just quit calling. Right? But who set the ball rolling? I made decisions based on fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Does that make sense? It can be that simple. But see, that's how we manage and control things in our life. That's the self-will that we're going to later see that blocks us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And that's the stuff we need to get around. But let me tell you, at step three, I didn't see this. I didn't understand it. So it's not about understanding and figuring it out before we move on. It's about moving on so that we can look back and go, oh, shit. Oh, yeah. What I have to be convinced of is my life run on my self-will is not successful. It goes on to say, quit playing God. Why? It doesn't work. If it's working for you, keep doing it. If it's not, we think we have a better way. On page 63, it says, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. If you are sponsored by me, you will hear that thousands and thousands of times, because that is your job description forever and ever and ever. What is your job? Keep close to Him, perform His work well. What does that look like today? I don't know. Right? But keep close to Him, perform His work well. The simplicity of this program blows me away. It's that simple. We like to get in here and muck it up. But it's so beautifully simple. We have this beautiful prayer that we get to say once we're ready. Once we're ready to take the step, move on. Listen, I'm not saying this third step decision isn't a vital one. The book says it is. It's vital. It's life-saving. It's serious. It's a commitment. It's a commitment to say, you know what? Am I ready to do this? Am I ready? Because I better make sure I am. Am I convinced of my truth in step one? And am I believing that there's a higher power that's going to restore me to sanity? Because I don't know about you guys, I'm thinking that drink is good at this point, right? I'm still thinking, just because I come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and sit in a chair and write my name on a chair doesn't keep me sober. I tried that. Don't do it. I wrote my name on a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous. Seriously, they still have it. I ran into a guy. He's like, we kept it in a closet. Didn't work, right? It's kind of like meeting makers make it. No, they don't. No, they don't. We come in here, and I don't know about y'all. Have y'all heard that whole, that for those who have been around for long, you hear that 1, 2, 3 out, 1, 2, 3 shuffle, 1, 2, 3 shuffle. And this is why. Because we make this decision, and then we don't follow it up. And that's the commitment. We've got to make the commitment of the step three, get down on our hands and knees and say this beautiful prayer, and then follow it up with action afterwards. The reason most people don't make that commitment to follow it up with action afterwards is probably because they're not convinced in step one. So if they're not convinced of step one, please don't make them do their third step. It's not worth it to them. It says, the wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea of voicing it without reservation. So there's some stipulations here, right? It was, we got to make it honest and humble. And if we do, and affect sometimes, not every time, don't expect a great woohoo when you get up off your knees. Don't expect it. Sometimes an effect, a very great one, was felt at once. You know, you hear all these, I had a burning bush experience in my step three. And then you hear some people say, I didn't. I did. I did. And my burning bush, I did not see fire. I did not see flames. I had a sense of, oh my God, I know nothing. I know nothing about God. I know nothing about these steps. I know nothing about AA. I've been around here for 13 years. What has happened to me? I think this might work. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. Not sure. Not sure. Right? Still doubting. Doubting. Because I've lived with alcohol for 22 years. I've drank for 22 years. That's all I know. How can you dare take that away from me? And you're telling me that I'm going to say a stupid little prayer, get off my knees and write some inventory, and I'm going to stay sober? That's insane. But it's the facts. It's the experience that we have had. It's the experience that they have had. If we do this work as outlined in this book, if we make the commitment, if we do it honestly, if we do it humbly, in effect, sometimes a great one was felt at once. It does not say you will enter a pink cloud. It doesn't say that. So shut up about the pink cloud. My biggest pet peeve in Alcoholics Anonymous is that people sit around and talk about this stupid pink cloud. I'm not kidding. I was that newcomer all the time. And we start looking better, and we start feeling better, and we start smelling better, and we start getting a little pokey-pokey again. And I'd say it because I like it. And we start thinking, oh my gosh, all is well in the world. I was making two hard turns of that drinking thing. I'm all right. And we go back and we drink again because we don't move on with the rest of the steps, because nobody's standing there in my face saying, you better get off your knees and get the pen to the paper. Because what this book says is the effect will be permanent. But, right, let's next we launch out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. I tried to, but they told me I did it wrong. Though our decision, meaning that third step decision, was a vital, life-saving, and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. I got an effect from that third step. Let me tell you, 7.5 years later, I still have an effect from that third step. Today, I get just as giddy when I read these words. I get just as excited when I read these words. I can't believe that getting on my knees and working some steps has kept me sober. But following this program of action has kept me sober when I tried everything else that was at my disposal. How cool is that? And it didn't say, you have to know God and understand God. It doesn't say that. It says, say this prayer, say it humbly, say it honestly, and then follow it up with some action. That's what it's all about.
We'll roll into some inventory and take a look at what this is going to look like. Now, if the third step is a decision, it's based on some information. If step one is the problem, step two is the solution, step three is a moment of contemplation about what to do about that. If self manifested in various ways is what really defeated me, I'm only catching a glimpse of it in the third step. Like Julie was talking about, when I look at the actor running the show and I'm looking at this stuff, I can get with pieces of it, but I'm about to see it live and live in color come full force in inventory. And that's the point. What Bill's setting us up for is to see that problems are of my own making. Because I've been a long time talking about problems that you made for me, at me, around me, about me, right? And what I'm about to embark upon is seeing the truth for the very, very, very first time. You know, earlier on it talks about I may have admitted certain faults, but I'm certain that you're more to blame. certain of it, convinced of it. You know, and I live in this delusional world of alcoholism where everything is distorted, out of proportion, doesn't make sense. And the only way to make sense about it is to say that it's out there. And what I can get down with in looking at the third step and rolling into inventory is that if the problem is me and the problem is internal, then it can change. If the problem remains you, then it's time to get a bottle because it's not going to be any different. So what we're looking at back on 64 is what's been blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. This is the whole driving point of inventory, is getting down to symptoms, causes, conditions. This is what we're looking for. So it goes into taking a commercial inventory. It's going to give us an example. Taking a commercial inventory is fact-finding, fact-facing process, right? So when it says searching and fearless, this is what we mean. Fact-finding is searching. Fact-facing is fearless, right? Inherently, we know some things deep down in our gut, but we're afraid to look at them. And if we look at them, it means, by God, we might have to accept some responsibility. Which is why nobody in this room, prior to getting sober, ever took personal inventory. You will never convince me that you did it. You might have pseudo-done it, but you didn't do it. Because if I can stop short and make it about you, why would I press on? I wouldn't, right? It's an effort to discover the truth, which is was the piece talking about moral inventory, which means truth, about the stock in trade. I'm going to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods. Get rid of them promptly and without regret. Remember that. Julie's going to talk in depth about that with 6 and 7. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. What they're referring to is delusions. I believe that some of the things in my life have served me and I'd like to hold on to them. The problem is they're killing me and everybody around me and I can't see it. And that's the sponsor's job, to get in and look at it and sift through and tease out the truth and show you the facts. Because I don't know about you guys, but I've lived a world based on emotion. Anybody get with that? If I feel it, it therefore it is. I don't like you, therefore you're a bad person. Well, not necessarily. I've got my little sensitive feelings hurt. There's been some sort of an exchange, and the truth has not been revealed yet until I slide down to fourth column, right? So God can't get in when I'm blocked out by resentments, my fears, and my sex conduct. So we're going to take an overhauling and look at what is it that's causing so much resentment within my spirit? The heaviness, the darkness, the drudgery, what does that look like? And a lot of times people say, well, I'm not really an angry person. I feel ya. I don't have enough energy to be angry. By God, I'm bitter. There's something that's grinding on me. There's something that's irritating me. Chris gives this great example. If the person that you are to write down in the first column, if you're having dinner with your significant other and this person walks into the restaurant, are you uncomfortable? Right? Their name goes on the list. I don't have to hate you. I don't have to plot your demise. I have some of you. But, right, are you uncomfortable? That's a great way to look at it if you're wondering what that might look like. So it talks about self being manifested in various ways, defeating us. We're going to consider its common manifestation. Because here's the truth. Inventory is all the same. Everybody's inventory. There'll be different names, different scenarios, but those are called manifestations of self. So if you're wondering, well, I don't have the same experiences, how will I be able to see this person's truth? How will this person be able to see my truth? Easily, just like that. Because all you're talking about is manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. Isn't that the truth? It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual maladies overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. They begin to introduce this peace, this malady, this sickness that's kind of all over us, and begin to look at what that looks like. So it says, they give you just the most simplistic directions. And here's the truth, guys. There's about 30,000 formats floating around about inventory. So not interested in which one of them you use. Doesn't matter to me. I need to see that you can get down to the facts. You want to use check boxes? Check on. You want to write it out? Right away. You want to use notebook paper? Cool. You want to do a printout? Fine. Do not get into a debate and get divisive about that kind of nonsense. It drives the newcomer into a state of confusion. Don't do that. So it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So I'm going to get down and look at it. I'm going to list people, institutions, and principles. So this is all you're looking at in first column. Don't overwhelm yourself. Don't work across the board trying to get them all set out. Just work first column. People. Who are the names? And you guys know this stuff. Some people think, I just can't remember. Really? Who are you on the bar stool talking about? Right? Who you been in the garage drinking at? You know who these people are. You've been ruminating for years. Because God knows we don't let anything go. Right? These people. These principles. What are the principles? What are principles of life that you don't care for? Maybe it's Ten Commandments. Maybe it's women should be seen and not heard. Right? Maybe it's men should treat people like this. You don't care. What is it that's grinding on you? Places, institutions, the police department, have they wronged you in your eyes? The legal system, you know, not been fair to you? Right? Never fair. Right? What are those institutions? CPS got your kids. You thought, you know, they just did you wrong. Get it out. Get it down on paper. You want to put specific names? Have at it. I like to group them. You know? I put Corinth Police Department. There's only one person I'm really upset with. The whole, all of you on there. You know? That's fine. Get down to it and see what it really looks like. You've been told it's not okay to be gay? Put that on there. That rubbing you the wrong way doesn't sit right? Write it down. You cannot be afraid of what that person's going to think. Right? I cannot care what Julie thinks about what I put on inventory. Life can't afford it. Absolutely can't. Get clear on first column because this will drive you. Then slide on over to that second column. What are the causes? And Bill's great. He's got it laid out on 65 on what his look like. And we're going to take his inventory here in a bit. It's the easiest thing in the world to see. So I ask myself, why am I angry? So the second column is going to look like a cause. What is it that you've done or has happened to me as a direct result of your behavior? So this is going to say, in most cases, it was found our self-esteem, pocketbooks, ambitions, personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. We were sore. We were burned up. Isn't that indicative of everyone in this room? Yeah. Burned up. Right? Eat up with resentment. So just as simplistic as Bill's done it on 65 on the cause, I mean, look at how simplistic this is. His attention to my wife. I'm telling you what, you pay attention to my man, we're going to get deep. I'm writing. He could have gone into novels about this, and he didn't. Why? Because the details are not important. Mm-hmm. They're really not. If your sponsor needs to hear more detail to get a clear depiction of what's going on, they'll ask. They will. But see, I get lost in column two, because that's where I've always stopped in my prior to getting sober. Sitting on a bar stool talking about column one and two and possibly how it affected me because I'm a martyr by nature. Right? But I get stuck in column two. Don't do that. It's not necessary. His attention to my wife. Told my wife about my mistress. He gossiped about me. Got me in trouble at home. Now he's trying to get my job at the office. He could have written huge. And you guys will run into people that do that. They'll bring you files. I've got 832 pages of inventory. I'm sure as hell I'm not going to listen to that. I don't have time, and it's not important. What we need to drive down is to the fourth column. I can't get hung up with you on you wanting to do therapy with me. It's not what we're doing. So it says, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, security, ambition, personal, or sex relations which have been interfered with? What part of self have you interfered with so that I'm not happy with you? Because if you don't threaten one of my God-given instincts, I don't know you're on the planet. I don't even notice you because that's how self-involved I was. Right? But you start threatening my money, the relationship, the way others perceive me. You embarrass me. Do any of these things that threaten sex relations, security, who you know, what I need to be okay, self-esteem, how I feel about me. You start stepping on those toes. And I will remember you till the day I die. Etched in stone. You know, what you did and the inflection and tone in your voice when you said it. I mean, we are just like that. It's too funny. So I'm looking at column one, column two, and column three. Now, I'm somebody that went ahead and wrote out the fourth column. I could see in some ways, in limited ways, where I had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking. I could see some of that. Just like I could see some of the actor running the show. But it wasn't until I got across the table from another woman who was emotionally detached from my drama and my nonsense to be able to really clearly see it. And then when I begin to do inventory, the fear begins to set in of, well, at some point I'll be listening to inventory, and what if I don't see it? Mm-hmm. Let me pose this question to you. Have you ever been at work and had a coworker begin to tell a story about how they were wronged? And you're sitting there thinking, well, I can get with that, but you totally set that in motion. You made some bad decisions way back there and kind of caused this stuff to manifest. So that's really kind of on you, right? It's super easy to see it in other people. But when you're in it, you're like in it to win it, right? You're like, no, you don't understand the detail and the, you know, she said this and hold on, I got another detail over here. It's like, nobody cares, right?
No.
Julie doesn't for sure. For sure. I got asked this question more often than not. Audrey, what are the facts? I said, I told you, I think that he feels because of what I think. Just like silliness, right? I'm a master at that. I think I know what you think about me. And then I proceed to make decisions based upon that. That's a recipe for disaster. Recipe for disaster. Bunch of mind readers. So as we went back through our lives, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Now, I'm a huge proponent of that. Thoroughness and honesty doesn't mean I take 6 months to write inventory. What it means is I got honest about the truth. I started from now. What's eating your lunch today? I'm not going to think about the boy who didn't, you know, ask me to dance at the third grade little square dance. That's not what's eating me. Right now, current, it was a relationship. It was the stuff my family and I have been through together. It was some financial stuff. It was the men in my life that had harmed. It was that stuff. And then I can go back through my life. But if I get hung up on trying to remember all that stuff from square one, it becomes overwhelming. It becomes daunting. And this is where people throw up their hands and go, no, never mind. It doesn't have to be that difficult.
Yeah, and let's get real clear. If you can't get thorough and honest on a piece of paper, welcome to rarely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You'll have trouble downstream. And this is where people think that they don't have to write things down and begin to justify why they don't matter. And you'll see people get loaded downstream and go, but I work the steps. Yeah, but were you honest? How many times does it have to say back here in 58, three times in the first paragraph to be honest? Right? If I still care what people think about me, I'm not ready to get sober. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. It talks about being fearless and thorough from the very start. It talks about next we launched out on a course of vigorous action. There denotes a real sense of urgency. And if you get caught up on how you feel, you're headed for a world of hurt. You just are. Sobriety's not difficult. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. I'm going to have to talk about, examine, get willing to do a bunch of stuff I've never been willing to do before. So, okay. Welcome to the process. If it was easy, everybody in the world would be sober. Right? But it denotes me doing some things that I'm not too keen on doing. So it says on 66, it says, to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. Isn't that the truth? The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. Anybody been there? Mm-hmm. I should have. I wish I had. Next time I'm gonna. And you replay that over and over, and you hate yourself because you couldn't be true. Couldn't be true to you. It says, but the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. That's an every time statement. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Right? Because the delusion is, if I can do it my way, I'll be happy. And you got to ask yourself that question. Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get your way or to get something different? Right? I've spent a lifetime sitting there thinking about how it should have gone and what y'all should have done and how it should have gone down. World of delusion. So this elusive fourth column nobody seems to talk about is on page 67. Couple paragraphs down, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Brand new concept. Own mistakes. I'm so not concerned with column one and column two. I'm really not. You could replace those with anybody's name, anybody's scenario. If you want to get free, you better look at you. Because the more time you spend looking at other people, the more unhappy you will become. You can take that principle on down the road. Because it will hold true. So it says, where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? See, this is the nature of the defect. This is where we're all the same. Julie's selfishness shows up and manifests very differently than mine. It does. See, Julie will run over you trying to make it work, trying to pile drive through life. I know better. I go behind the scenes quietly as I smile and get deceitful and fix whatever it is that I don't like and then go, huh? right? That's what that, it manifests very differently. But it's the same defect, selfish. We think we know what you need to be doing. How arrogant of me. But it will show up differently. But this is the good news, is that it's all the same. It just might appear a little bit different. So we're looking for selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. So if you've got somebody writing it out on notebook paper, that's all they're writing. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Then they're going to write the ways according to that resentment as they work across the page. How were they selfish? How were they dishonest? And remember that dishonesty includes delusion more often than not. Right? Self-seeking. How was it all about me? Because isn't it always all about me? Right? Frightened. What you'll find is that at the base of every resentment is a core fear. It is the driving force of all of your actions. And I've never, ever known that to not be true. Now, here comes the rub. Sometimes it's like, well, man, that was a bad situation that happened to them. I mean, how can they even have a part in that? Let me show you where it is. Slide back over to 66. First full paragraph down, one line in, it says, to the precise extent that we permit these, meaning these resentments, this unhappiness, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? There you go. There you go. Is it your fault that you were touched inappropriately at 3 years old? Did you bring that on? No. You didn't play a part in that. As an adult, now that you're 47 and getting sober and have been unable to let it go your entire life, whose fault is that? You think you can have a new experience with a human being as you're carrying around the sickness from your past and justifying it why you get to drink? That's the part. See what I mean? There's always a part. What are you doing with it? Are you a molestation victim? Or are you a survivor? Those are very different things. Are you using it to help other men and women who have had similar experiences and have pain and bring them somewhere different and cool? Or are you still, wah, 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 I got touched at 3? Wow. Right? Welcome to some truth in your life. Now that is hard to see. It's hard to see. And I'll tell you what, it's even harder to say sometimes. But if you love somebody, and like you love another alcoholic, you'll tell them the truth even if it's uncomfortable. Was it your fault you got raped? Mm-mm. No. But what are you doing with it? Right? This is what we're talking about. So back to 67, back to this paragraph. It says, though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. All right? So if I'm going to get somewhere different, it stands to reason I've got to know where I am. I have to have a clear depiction of where I am. And in the fourth step, where I am is bound by self. I made a decision in 3 to ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self, but in 4 I'm getting to see what bondage looks like. See, I'm bound by my defects. I am bound by selfishness. I am bound by delusion. I am bound by my martyrdom, my victim mentality. And I tell you what, guys, if you walk out of a fifth step still a victim, you are in so much trouble. Victims do not get sober. They don't, and they damn sure don't stay sober. Don't. See, I've got to be free. If it's still out here, then I'm still bound. If it can be in here, it can be changed. And I've got to be able to have that mentality to walk in. So step 4 is kind of like Cliff calls it a diagnostic step. Right? We're diagnosing what the problem really is. So as I've written an inventory, as Julie's listening to it, she's making a list of character defects that are spot on, that are keeping me in bondage of self, so that when I walk into 6 and 7, which she's going to talk about later, I got a clear idea of what I'm working with. God already knows what He's working with, but I got to get eyeballs on what I'm working with, so that I can clearly give to God what's been shown. So it gets real important not to do a fifth step with just a buddy. Somebody who's going to go, oh, I hear you. All right, move on. You know, bless your heart, darling. I'd have drank too if I had that kind of life. You know, the book is crystal clear that if you want to do some inventory work with a clergy person, if you want to do it with a pastor, if you want to do it with somebody of that nature, rock on. That's cool. But understand that's not what we're looking at. You need to go to confession. Alcoholics Anonymous so honors that. Awesome. Go do what you need to do. But get with a drunk to see the truth. because this will not be about what do I need to be doing for forgiveness. You've already been forgiven by God. And we'll talk more about that in the ninth step step. You've already been forgiven. What we're looking at is what is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. How many times have you gotten on your knees and said, God, please just help me stop drinking? And you said it with utter sincerity, only to get off your knees and find yourself loaded in short order. What happened? Were you not really sincere? No, of course you were. But you had too much stuff blocking you. Mm-hmm. Right? So I've got to get down to causes and conditions. I love Joe and Charlie that break down four-step inventory, and they talk about it being like a football replay. You know, those situations, those scenarios that you're writing about in the first couple columns, when you begin to replay those, because that's what resentment means, to replay it and then to essentially refeel it. Every time I replay that conversation I had with that woman 15 years ago, I replay it. I refeel it, and the madder I become. And the more she comes off looking like a jerk, and I come off looking like a victim. So it's kind of like a football replay where the first time you see it, you're like, ooh, that was a pretty hard hit. They got the quarterback, and they hit him pretty hard. That was bad. Then what are they going to do? They're going to slow it down and replay it. And as you see him flip up in the air, you're like, now, that kind of looked like you need a penalty on that, or it looks crazy. And as he hits the ground, you're like, now that is wrong. That is wrong. But they're going to replay it about four times. By the fourth time, you're mad. You don't even care about the teams that are in it, but you're mad. And that's what that stuff does when I selfishly sit and ruminate over and over and over. And the inflection and the tone in your voice change, and you get meaner and meaner every time you got on to me or whatever it was that was said. That's... The obsession of my mind at this point is that I've got to be right and you've got to be wrong. Wow. I remember sitting in treatment, I had this old, I call him old man Dan. He was about 100. And we would sit in this place called the Butt Huts and smoke cigarettes. I never went to gym. I hardly went to class. He would sit out there and teach me big book. And he used to ask me, kid, do you want to be right or do you want to be at peace? And I was like, well, I want to be both. You know? Don't we all?
Right on.
Don't we all? Welcome to being a grown-up. Do you want to be right or do you want to be free? Do you have the ability to look at something for what it is and go, you know what, can't change any of that, but where I was at fault was I set the ball rolling by the comments that I made and the decision I made that I knew what was best for everybody, and so this is essentially my part, and I can do something with that and let the rest of it go. Right, but I don't know about y'all, but I've decided to let stuff go in the past, only to 45 minutes find myself later irritated with you again. I don't know how to let that kind of stuff go. And so this is the process of inventory is going to drive me into seeing what the truth is. And after I can see what the truth is, back on 67, where it says, we placed them before us in black and white, it's real hard to argue with the paper. Right? If the list, I'm looking at a list of character defects that I am not thrilled to have, but I can't argue with the paper because it's dead on. It's based upon the facts. So it says we admitted them honestly and we're willing to set these matters straight. The question then becomes, do you like what you see? Are you willing to go to any lengths to change that? Because I'm a lot like Julie in the fact that I thought I was a giver. I've been told by my mother since I was tiny that I was precious. She always said that you're the most precious thing God ever made. God, you know, I believed that. And when I got into AA and they said, problems are your own making, I went, excuse me, precious. You know? Maybe you didn't hear the first three columns. Right? But I had to get driven into a point. See, what happens is we come into a fifth step prepared to sort of pseudo plead our case. Right? Because we've been doing it in the bars for a number of years. Guess what she did? And guess what he said? Right? And a strong sponsor, 10 times out of 10, will spin the tables on you and show you, I hear you, darling, but here's the truth. Oh, it's like a gut in the, you know, knife in the belly. But if that's the most freeing thing that will ever happen to you. I remember walking out of a fifth step and going, oh, I'll be damned, it's my fault. How cool is that? How cool is that? Kind of takes the defensive component right on out of it. So we look at this resentment inventory, and then we're going to move on to the fear inventory. There's a couple, you know, there's lots of different ways to write fear inventory. You can do it in columns, you can do it in pair, whatever. What I've got to see is the same thing. So down on 67 it says, the short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. If you can't trace a resentment to fear, you hadn't worked. because it's a driving force every single time. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through it. It's kind of like, you ever seen like a knit sport coat? Right? And there's so many tiny little intricate colors, you can't even tell what color is what because it's so woven. That's what fear is. It gets in your cells, in your tissue. It's at the core of every single thing. It's just woven. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. Right? This is crosses lines with resentment and with fear. What happens, why resentment is the number one offender, is it turns to self-pity like that. Then I wear it like a cloak of dignity. Right? Oh, have you been through this? No? Step to the side. I get to act however I want to. I get to get loaded. I get to ... Right? That's the problem with this stuff that turns to self-pity. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Absolutely. You got to think about it like this. I create fear out of my selfish way of living. Fear is always driven by a selfish motive. I want what I want. Myers always says, that's the battle cry of every drunk I've ever known. Smartest thing I ever heard. I want what I want, and I'm afraid I'm not going to get it. Or you're going to get it first. Or you're going to take it from me. But I'm all about me. Out of my selfish mode of living, that modality drives me into fear, which places me in a position of what? To panic, and then begin to think of, who's my thinkers in here? Anybody thinkers, plotters, planners, right? Oh, God. It just, ooh. It places me in a position of self-reliance. And then I begin to concoct plans and set things in motion. Then when it backfires, I want to spin around and go, hey, point the finger at you. Well, who set it all in motion? Oh, me, because I panicked. I didn't think I was going to get what I wanted. So I did what? I was dishonest, deceitful, manipulative, self-serving, inconsiderate of you and what was going on in your world because I got my eye on the prize. Right, so I've got to get down and look at this stuff. So sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Early on in sobriety, I used to read this text and think, God Almighty, they're so dramatic in the way that they write. But if they're really, really not, it ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Why? It's the driving force of every wrong decision, every bad action, every poor decision that I've ever made. Every single one of them can be traced back to that. So it says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. So I'm going to get out some paper. I'm going to list, what are my fears? What is it that I'm always afraid of? And there's tons of fears out there. You could be afraid of just about anything. And the truth is, most of us are afraid of the opposite, too. Afraid of failure. I bet you're afraid to succeed, too. What would you do then? Right? I'm afraid to be alone, but you're also afraid to be in a committed relationship. You know, it's the funniest thing. I'm afraid of everything a lot of times. I want to act like I'm not afraid of anything, but that's just not the truth. So I'm going to list what fears I have. And then it says we asked ourselves why we had them. So I'm going to list the fears, then I'm going to ask, why do I have it? If I'm afraid of being alone, why might that be? It's uncomfortable. There's nobody else to rely on. I'm afraid of what people will think about me being alone. Stuff like that, right? Wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? Everything I touch turns to crap. So it says self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. This is Jim. When it made us cocky, it was worse. You ever watch those people that come into the room, got to let you know they're in the room? That's not about arrogance. It only appears that way. That's about absolute paralyzing fear. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. When it made us cocky, it was worse. It's real hard to watch, especially when you know what the driving force is. It's like, oh, darling, we see you. Sit down. It's okay. It's okay. You don't have to be at the top of everything, the best of everything, the head of everything, places, people. It's about fear, not about arrogance. Right? So I'm going to look at what is the fear, why do I have the fear, and am I relying on me or am I relying on my Creator? I love to watch people get confused around that question. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it's possible I'm relying on God. Really? You sure? If you're relying on God, are you in paralyzing fear? No. No. So, I mean, you could get real detailed with it if you wanted to. Have you been relying on you or God? in what areas have you not been right? You can trace it on out if you want to, but the important thing is to see the truth. I'm afraid to be alone. Why? All the reasons I listed a moment ago. Where has self-reliance failed me? I stay in relationships too long I don't need to be in. Or I get in relationships when I'm clear that I don't need to. Have you ever had that? We all have that God-given intuition. It's just a matter of are you awake to it or not. Mm-hmm. But have you ever had that where you go, don't do that, don't do that? You've got that gripping, it's kind of like it crushes your tummy. It makes you go, don't. And you do it anyway. Right? It's about self-reliance, right? Self-reliance availed me nothing. Kind of like self-knowledge. Self-anything is going to be wind up on the floor. I guarantee you. Guarantee. So that's about self-reliance. So once I get down and look at that, I can see that my faith, it's not that I don't have capacity for faith in something bigger. It's that it's been misplaced and I've had it in me. Because isn't that what you're taught when you're little? Audrey, have a goal, have drive, have determination, set a plan, make a path. Don't count on anybody else. Get it. Right? And we just kind of pile drive through life, giving it 100%, bumping into everybody and everything, stepping on toes as we go, getting our little feelings hurt when things don't pan out. I love when it says, what happens? The show doesn't come off very well. I wrote the word shocking above that line. Right? Everything I turn to, I've got a death grip on because I'm driven by fear. It's the funniest thing to watch these little drunks come in and they've got their talons gripped around a life of destruction that they hate and they're terrified to let it go. Driving force of my actions. Horrible to watch. It says, perhaps there's a better way. This is based on the experience of the first 100. We think so. For we're now on a different basis. Basis of what? Having made a third step commitment, because that's what it is. It's a commitment. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. Isn't that a concept? So instead of steady handing out parts to all the rest of the actors and X's, get on your X's, right? Places, I'm in the world to play the role He assigns. And that's it. Me and Him, no one else. This is what we're talking about. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? This is what they mean by living life on God's terms, not living life on life's terms. I mean, that's a common confusion. Living life on life's terms, we know what that looks like. That's what it looked like out there in the third dimension. We're attempting to slide on over into the fourth dimension, living on a spiritual basis, which is a brand new world for most of us, right? Enable us to match calamity with serenity. That's one of the biggest promises I love, because it's the difference between me manhandling life and then letting, or on the flip side, letting life come at me connected to the power of God. Very different. Very different. So it says down here, we've got the and I forgot about the resentment prayer. We'll go back and look at that. Down at the...
I'll touch on it.
Okay. All right, so we're looking at the fear prayer in the next paragraph. It says, the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. It's more like faith produces courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. Demonstrate through us what He can do. Mm-hmm. Here we go. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. Not for Him to fix the situation to my liking. Because that was my previous prayer. God, get on it. Fix it. Look at it. Pay attention. Right? No. What would you have me be? Very different. And I tell you what, we always think that's about action. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's sit down and hush. Don't touch it. Don't call her. Don't get on top of that. Don't mention it. Leave it alone. I learned that more often than not. It's a painful lesson over and over. Sit down and hush. It says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. This is the point where I stop trying to manhandle and begin to be of maximum service. Right? But the deal is, we're all waiting to trust God and feel connected and okay before we take action. Because that's kind of how we do it in third dimension. We use logic. We worship the God of reason. If it makes sense, do it. If we can wrap our brains around it, it's a good idea. Not so. Not so in recovery. I'm not waiting to overcome fear to take necessary action. I take necessary action and then I begin to overcome fear. It's everything in here is backwards. It makes no sense. And that's okay. I mean, how have we lived our whole life? Why do you need it to make sense now? right? Put down the bottle of whiskey. Just try it. This is all that we're looking for.